The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on July 8, 2018. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Thank you for coming today. Today I was going to talk from this book written by Steve, Meditation Now or Never. Very helpful book. I recommend it to you. Even if you've read it, I recommend reading it again. There's some very helpful teachings in here presented in a very clear way. It's extremely helpful in understanding what this way of life is. And so I've talked about the teachings from this book before, but I thought I'd return to it again. It's very helpful teachings, and I recommend this book very highly. It's difficult to talk about this way of life, but Steve, in this book and in his other teachings, found a way to make it very clear. So I strongly recommend this book, and I'll be talking from it today. I'm going to be talking about meditation, or we could say Zen practice. I think the terms can be used interchangeably. Meditation, or Zen practice, doesn't only take place when you're seated in a formal meditation posture. It begins the moment you turn your attention to what is taking place right here, right now. Thus, we can bring awareness to any activity, whether we're at work, playing with our children, eating dinner, washing the dishes, or taking out the garbage. Zen practice or meditation begins right now, right here. It can't begin someplace else or at some other time. If you wish to know a mind that is tranquil and clear, sane and peaceful, you must take it up now. If you wish to free yourself from the frantic mind that runs our lives, begin with the intention to be present now. Nobody can bring awareness to your life but you. Meditation is not a self-help program, a way to better ourselves so we can get what we want, nor is it a way to relax before jumping back into busyness. It's not something to do once in a while, either, whenever you happen to feel like it. Instead, meditation is a practice that saturates your life and in time can be brought into every activity. It is the transformation of mind from bondage to freedom. In practicing meditation, we go nowhere other than right here, where we now stand, where we now sit, where we now live and breathe. In meditation, we return to where we already are, the shifting, changing, ever-present now. If you wish to take up meditation, it must be now or never. I recently heard a very beautiful song by Elvis Presley called It's Now or Never. And very beautiful song, though I don't think Elvis Presley was talking about meditation, but maybe he was. I don't know. I don't remember the lyrics. The only part I remember is it's now or never. That's all you really need to remember. So that's a very important teaching. In meditation, meditation is very simple, yet it requires time, energy, determination, and discipline. In meditation, we are aware of the frequent wandering of our mind and bring it back over and over to the movement of the breath, to the posture of the body, and to itself. We repeatedly return to the body, mind, and breath. This activity, though simple, is not easy. It takes diligence to return again and again to what is taking place without falling into distraction or agitation or mental dullness. It's not easy, he says. It's a very simple activity, but it's not easy. because we have such a strong tendency to get caught up in our ideas and beliefs and assumptions about reality and act based on them rather than acting out of being aware of direct here now experience. We are all human beings with human minds. Whether we acknowledge it or not, the human mind is busy and scattered much of the time. It tends to drift off a great deal, often creating difficulty for ourselves and for others in the process. Our minds all have the profound ability to package reality into conceptual models or mental representations of reality. This conceptualizing mind is a great treasure. Our great art, music, literature, and invention, as well as the scientific exploration of the earth and space beyond, are in part creations of this wonderful, incredible capacity of the human mind to package, process, and represent reality. Yet we are easily entangled in our conceptualizing minds, in beliefs, ideas, daydreams, and opinions, and we easily lose sight of the distinction between reality and our ideas about reality. In the process, we miss the true, vibrant life being lived in this very moment, right here, right now. As a result of our not recognizing this, we suffer. Meditation is to leave the clamorous mishmash of our conjured up world and return to the simple and still clarity of here and now. We usually get caught up in our ideas about here and now reality or about what reality is and live our life based on these ideas and beliefs and overlook the actual direct experience that's being lived. We overlook our life that's being lived right now in favor of the conceptual models of it and in favor of the ideas and beliefs and assumptions that we have about here and now reality, about our life itself. The undisciplined mind is easily agitated, nervous, wanting, fearful, preoccupied, distracted, scattered, and confused. In meditation, we can begin to see just how busy and distracted our minds really are. We can learn to observe without judgment how our minds constantly go this way and that, lunging towards the things we want and away from the things we loathe or fear. We also begin to see the pain and dissatisfaction that is none other than this leaning mind. And we return to this moment where sanity, patience, confidence, and openness await again and again, over and over. This isn't to say that the leaning of our minds is bad or wrong or dysfunctional, or that we have to root it out and destroy it. There's nothing wrong with our human minds. It's just that we don't handle them properly. And we usually get taken in by the belief that our life corresponds to the ideas we have about it and ignore this actual direct experience, which is not something that we can encapsulate with some conceptual explanation or description. We overlook the actual direct experience and get caught up in our limited views about what our life is. In meditation, we slow ourselves down and observe the activity of the mind. We then see that much of this activity is an incessant monologue of mostly inane chatter. We see that many of the things we obsess over and that keep us preoccupied have no consequence whatsoever. We see that much of what we worry about passes away within minutes. Indeed, after a few minutes more, we have forgotten what we were so worried about and have moved on to the next temporary obsession. Yeah, I was amazed when I first started to carry out meditation how busy my mind was, how it would leap around to all these ideas and fantasies and all this mental trash. It was just sort of jumping from one thing to another. You know, I was amazed at how busy my mind was. I was amazed how difficult it was to really pay attention here and now, because my mind was always going off to this mental trash and getting caught up in that. I'd hear commercials and old rock and roll songs and thing. When I started practicing Zazen, I thought I'd be experiencing something more profound than this, but it was. I was amazed how busy and how easily it is to get caught up in the mental busyness and mental trash that arises. But even mental trash is not something bad. Just don't be caught by it. Allow it to come and go. But those old commercials and rock and roll tunes just come and go. We don't have to criticize ourselves for getting lost in that. To see that we are caught up in this and just allow it to drop away by itself. In meditation, we learn to break this pattern. We learn to take care of the mind by observing its dynamics without grabbing at, interfering with, or rejecting anything that comes up. In meditation, we begin seeing what we usually ignore, the vibrant reality in which we all live all the time, which is to say, right here and now. We begin to loosen our fixation on the thoughts that continuously come up in our minds like clouds of smoke or bubbles in a glass of champagne. In time, we learn not to grasp the ungraspable. Meditation is also an expression of faith, not faith in what you believe or what you think, but faith in direct experience itself. Meditation expresses our confidence in our ability to see for ourselves the root of human suffering and trust in our capacity to bring it to an end. We overlook our actual direct experience and get taken in by our conceptual models of what our life is, what is being directly experienced now. And because of this, we suffer. This is the root of human suffering. We ignore actual experience and get caught up in our conceptualizations, our limited views of what this reality is. Thus, meditation is not something you need to ponder. Meditation is something you do. To truly take up this practice is none other than the actualization of freedom right here at your permanent address. Here now is our permanent address. We can't leave here and now. Gary Roshi used to emphasize this. You can't leave here and now. He would tell stories about this. These stories, the point of these stories was to emphasize our practice to live here and now. We can't leave here and now. It's our permanent address. So live it fully. Be aware here and now without getting caught up in our limited ideas and beliefs about what our here now experience is, and really live as we truly are here and now. And the next chapter, why bother with meditation? Why bother with taking up the practice of meditation when even in its simplicity it's so difficult? As soon as we hear this question, we come up with a list of reasons to justify meditation. We usually think that we're going to get something from meditation or Zen practice, that it will lower our blood pressure, reduce our stress, calm us down, and enhance our concentration. And we tell ourselves that if we practice long enough and in just the right way, it might even bring us to enlightenment. This is what I thought when I first started out. I was thinking how great that would be if I could attain enlightenment. And my friends would really be impressed if they heard that I had attained enlightenment. And I fantasized about going to my high school reunion as an enlightened man. And I imagine people would be very impressed with that, seeing me go to my high school reunion as an enlightened man. And they would probably say, "Norm, we can't believe that you became an enlightened man. That's amazing, because back in high school, you were such a loser. How could you become an enlightened man? But yet, here you are, an enlightened man. This is astonishing." I would occasionally entertain fantasies like this, but as Steve says, all of this is delusion. As long as we insist that Zen practice must be as long as we insist that Zen practice must have some use or purpose or meaning or fulfill us in certain ways, we fail to understand it. As my teacher and many other teachers before him used to say, Zen practice is useless. One of the obstacles we face when we first begin Zen practice is our desire to know and reap its benefits. We ask, how can Zen practice help me? This approach assumes there is something wrong with us and that we need to improve ourselves. So when we hear that Zen practice is useless, that it's not about generating benefit, we wonder, what's the point? But if we are to understand meditation, or anything at all, we must drop our preconceived notions, biases, prejudices, and expectations at the door. Instead, let's look at the mind we bring to this practice. If it's a mind of getting somewhere, a mind that seeks peace, calm, enlightenment, or freedom, then it's not the mind of enlightenment. It's a mind that seeks gain and keeps coming up short. A mind of strain and frustration. Here is why Zen practice is useless. Zen practice or meditation is finally just to be here now, not over there in some other place called peace or freedom or enlightenment, not longing for something else, not trying to be or to acquire something new or different, not seeking benefit. We need to understand that the wanting mind is the antithesis of the mind of meditation. The mind of meditation is not driven by desires and fears and longings. Indeed, a mind that seeks to rid itself of these painful mental qualities is already the dissatisfied and confused mind from which we seek to free ourselves. When we desire to be desireless, we remain trapped in desire. When we want to be wantless, we bind ourselves with yet another chain. We cannot carry out Zen practice for any other reason than to be aware. And as Steve discusses later on in the book, eventually it becomes clear that awareness or awakeness is what our life is. This is our true life. And Steve gives a very good pointer to that in another part of this book. We have to learn to see all of our desires and expectations as the forms of immediate dissatisfaction that they are, and then let them go. If you're carrying out Zen practice to get something, whether it's tranquility, lower blood pressure, concentration, psychic powers, meaningfulness, enlightenment, or freedom from the desire for enlightenment, you're ignoring here now. You're off, caught up in distraction, daydreaming, confusion, and preoccupation. Zen practice doesn't mean anything but itself, full engagement in whatever is going on. It's not about looking for something. To look for meaning or value is to look for a model, a representation, an explanation, a justification for something other than this, what's immediately at hand, what's being directly experienced now. In this meditation, we release whatever reasons and justifications we might have and take up this moment with no thought that this directly experienced here now reality can or should be something other than just this. Zen practice or meditation is not our mental and emotional business as usual. It's about deeply seeing what's going on within our own mind. If we wish to free ourselves from a mind that's tormented by greed, fear, obsession, and distraction, we must first clearly recognize that it's the same tormented mind we're using to blindly pursue Zen practice. Since we can't throw out this tormented mind, we can instead begin to look honestly at it with all its expectations, fears, and desires. In Zen practice, we do not try to forcefully detach ourselves from the feelings, thoughts, and expectations that arise in our mind. We don't try to force anything into or out of the mind. Rather, we let things arise and fall, come and go, and simply be. In Zen meditation, Zen practice, the things you like come up, then pass away and come up again. The same goes for the things you fear or dislike. In Zen practice, we simply see this clearly without trying to grip or control any of it. There will be times in meditation when you're relaxed and times when our minds are agitated. We let both of these states be what they are. We do not seek to attain a relaxed state or to drive out our agitated and distracted mind. That is just more agitation. When we allow the mind to function and just be here now with whatever comes up without grasping, the mind settles on its own. If we stay with Zen practice, continually being aware here now, gradually the unhealthy aspects of the mind, including ideas about what we're going to get out of meditation, will drop away on their own. Steve goes on to talk about mistaken notions that we have about meditation. He mentions one. He calls this another misguided notion about meditation is that it's about becoming enlightened. But you can't become enlightened. It's not possible. You can't become enlightened for the same reason that you can't come into contact with truth. You're already here, immersed in it. It's like trying to become human or searching high and low for air. When we search for enlightenment, we're like a fish searching for water or a bird seeking the sky. Enlightenment isn't something you can pursue. And anyway, you don't need to because it's already right where you are. Meditation is not about straining or striving for some special state of mind. It's about letting your habitual striving drop away and simply experiencing what's present before we make anything of it. But still, people feel that we have to strain and struggle and strive to get enlightenment. And I heard a story about a person who was at a session where the people there were struggling and straining to have an enlightenment experience. And this person was kind of turned off by this dualistic attitude that prevailed at this session. It made him think of elderly men sitting on the toilet straining and struggling to have a bowel movement. He was very unimpressed by this straining and struggling attitude that he saw at this session. And we don't need to strain and strive. That's just setting up a dichotomy and getting caught up in our ideas about what this practice is about. Here in meditation, we get in touch with what's going on right here in our own minds. We begin to recognize how much of what distresses us has no substance to it and is simply generated by our thinking. We begin to see what's causing our problems, and over time we learn not to be caught by it. Some people imagine that meditation is dangerous because they fear facing themselves and discovering what may lurk beneath their habitual distractions. They're afraid to find out too much about themselves and worry that what they will find will be devastating or terrifying. But you don't need to worry about this. Anything you encounter will not come up so fast or strongly that you won't be able to deal with it. Sure, some of it may be temporarily surprising or saddening or frightening or bewildering, but it won't last if you don't entertain it. If you do play with it, Just recognize that you're the one who keeps it going. Whatever it is, if you leave it alone, it will dissolve and dissipate. It's not really ultimately real. It's only what you happen to think. Meditation takes a very gentle approach. Nothing is forced. Just as we have slowly built up mental habits over the years, they will drop away at a similar rate. It's a natural process if we'd only not interfere. We will also discover that much of what comes up that we feared or dreaded is just a phantom, no more real than the boogeyman. When we have the courage to simply look at our own mind, we will see that there's nothing to be afraid of. There's also the mistaken notion that meditation is solely for people of high spiritual caliber. And then Steve has in parentheses, whatever that may mean. In fact, meditation is for anyone and everyone. Every conscious human being is capable of it, worthy of it, and fully equipped to do it. If you don't want to meditate, then don't. But don't pretend that it's beyond your ability or capability. We all can be aware here and now. It's all of us can carry out this meditation practice. In the practice of meditation, discipline is gentle and even. Even if we notice that our attention is drifted from awareness of the breath, body, and mind, we simply bring it back. That's all. In meditation, we don't try to subdue the mind or silence or prevent it from churning up thoughts through some act of mental force. It would be fruitless and only serve to intensify the mind's penchant to secrete more thoughts. It isn't our business to destroy or eliminate thought. We only need to come back to this moment, this here now moment, to body, mind, and breath, and not get caught up in our thinking. In meditation, we do this over and over countless times. The practice of meditation frees us from our insane desire to control ourselves and others. As we continue this practice, doing it over and over again, we discover a mind that is open, magnanimous, and free. We don't have to fight ourselves to find this mind. As we simply cultivate awareness, all these mental afflictions naturally erode and wash away. Sometimes people get the idea that meditation is about escaping from our lives or our painful feelings or even reality itself. In fact, meditation is just the opposite. It's about settling down and facing reality. In meditation, we investigate our own mind openly and honestly without denying anything. We see how we tell ourselves stories about ourselves, about others, and about the world. It's easy to get caught up in these dramas of who we think we are and who we think others are and what we think the world is or ought to be. In meditation, we begin to see that all these mental dramas are like puffs of smoke, the buildup of just so much mental pollution that could all blow away with even a single breath of reality. Many people come to meditation hoping to experience bliss, euphoria, ecstasy, or some superconscious state of mind. Many spiritual practices and exercises aim at inducing such states. So can any number of things, both good and not so good. A gorgeous sunset, rapturous music, sex, street drugs, or even a double espresso. Meditation is not about creating any particular feeling. Meditation is about awareness, about waking up to reality. Some people try to use meditation like a drug as a way to escape from life or distract ourselves from reality. But anything that draws us away from reality is deception. Sometimes people dismiss meditation as a selfish act, something that removes us from life or sets us apart from others. If you meditate with others, then you are hardly being selfish or isolated. in this experience. Indeed, it's best to meditate with others if possible. But even if you are the only person in the room, you are anything but isolated, you are sitting on the cushion or chair that someone else made, which is on the floor that other people built. There's the sound of the bird chirping outside. There's the low sunlight dancing on the wall. There's a fresh breeze streaming through the window. There's the whole world right here being directly experienced now. In meditation, we come to see that we're not separate from others. We come to realize that we're being supported and confirmed by the whole world. This is anything but selfish, anything but isolating. Furthermore, in meditation, we can begin to see through the facade of self as well as the facade of others. We can begin to see how selfishness arises, how easily we get caught up in our petty concerns, desires, hatreds, and fears. Gradually, in meditation, all these self-centered thoughts begin to drop away as we see the pain they cause. Thus, meditation frees us from the selfish, greedy mind that troubles us so much. Far from being selfish, meditation is an act of deep appreciation and generosity. Steve talks about problems we might have in our meditation practice. One of them is the problem with boredom. But Steve makes an interesting observation. He says, boredom can be interesting. If you find boredom interesting, you cease to be bored. Looking at boredom is much like viewing our problems. If we look at boredom with curiosity, boredom no longer seizes us. Curiosity, openness, and investigation cure boredom. What's happening when we're bored? We've ejected ourselves out of this vibrant, direct experience and into our own heads, so to speak. If we're bored, we're not present but drifting away in our thought. You can't be mindful and bored at the same time. But what if, mindful or not, we do get bored in meditation? First, we should just notice the boredom. As we look at it, we will see that it is not a physical state, but a mental fabrication, a desire to be somewhere other than right here, right now. When we try to run away from boredom by looking for something to busy ourselves or to distract ourselves or to entertain ourselves, we're bored with boredom by our own failure to engage fully with here and now. Over time, if we patiently observe boredom, however, we will eventually discover boredom's flip side, wonder and creativity. Indeed, lightning can often strike from boredom's gray cloud. We can learn to practice patience in the midst of boredom and allow it to pass as we would an overcast sky. We can learn to let these different states of mind come and go by taking quiet interest and what is taking place now. And while at first we may think not much is going on, with careful observation we may begin to realize a whole world beyond our petty lives unfolding in every moment. There's no boredom here, now, and no room for the tight confines of our usual self-preoccupation. There is only vibrant life and freedom. Talks about getting caught up in distracting thoughts and emotions. All kinds of thoughts and emotions will bubble up in meditation. Some will be mundane, some surprising, some delightful, some disturbing. Let them all arise and fall. With whatever thoughts and emotions come up, don't resist them. Just let them come up as they will, and they will die down or drift away on their own. Just be aware of thoughts and emotions without comment, without adding anything. He talks about the problem of resistance to Zen practice or meditation. Regularity is the cure for resistance to Zen practice. When it's time for your regular sitting meditation or any here now moment, just carry out sitting meditation or return to the here now moment. If you feel resistance arising, know that it's not unusual. Go ahead and feel that resistance. Look at it, and then continue your regular meditation schedule. Resistance or no resistance. Don't let it take you away, or it will only strengthen. If you can get past resistance to meditation, nothing else in life will be an obstacle. If the worst situation comes to you, you can deal with it. If the best situation lands on you, you can continue to walk steadily. Over time, resistance will become but an echo in the mind. Be honest and attentive with whatever resistance come up, and be honest and attentive with whatever resistance does come up in your mind. Face it down, and it will cease to be a problem. With regular practice, the resistance will evaporate like dew in the early morning sun. Steve talks about the problem of discouragement. Discouragement is unfulfilled expectations. It results from getting stuck in how we think things ought to be. To the extent that we are discouraged, we're not actually present. We're caught up in our ideas. If you're discouraged, just return to right here, right now. This place right here is where we can have no expectations. There is satisfaction with whatever comes up. When you totally engage your life, you'll not experience discouragement. Just one more short section here I want to read. When you practice meditation with other people, your meditation has a profound effect on those others, encouraging and supporting them. This is true even if at first you can't feel it, and even if no one says anything about it. This works both ways, of course. In meditating with others, their presence also supports and encourages you. When I first began meditating with others, I felt very encouraged by their presence and practice. But it took a while for me to realize how this effect went both ways. This tells us something essential about the nature of meditation practice, and indeed about who we are as creatures living on this planet. We are all in this together, whether we acknowledge it or not. We're all in this together. This reminds me of a television show I used to watch years ago on PBS. It was called the Red Green Show, and Red Green was the proprietor and caretaker at the Possum Lodge in the woods, and he would frequently have to repair the things that broke down around the lodge. And his favorite way of repairing things was with duct tape. And he used to have an expression, if you can't fix it with duct tape, it's not worth fixing. That was one of Red Green's famous expressions. Another one that's very relevant to the talk today, he used to, when people would tell him his problems, he'd say, you know, I'm rooting for you. We're all in this together, he would say. You know, so whenever I hear that expression, we're all in this together, I think of red green. His expression, if you can't fix it with duct tape, it's not worth fixing. That's not an important one to remember. But we're all in this together. That is a good one to remember. As we learn to engage fully and directly in what we're doing, we have a profound effect on others by encouraging them to take up their lives in the same manner. Indeed, although it may not always be evident, everything we do has a profound influence on others. With practice, meditation will show us something else that we. With practice, meditation will show us something else. It'll show us that we can't locate where anything takes place. Smell a flower. This is very interesting what Steve points out here. Smell a flower. Where does the experience take place? In the flower, in your nose, in your mind? Do such questions even make sense? And where does your mind take place? Without giving it careful consideration, we may quickly say that our experience is somehow in our heads. And yet clearly we are sensing things that seem to be, in quotes, out there somehow. So where is this happening? We can't really locate it. This gives us a big clue about the nature of mind and experience, though it goes mostly unnoticed by nearly everyone. Even after it has been pointed out to us, we tend to become confused by the question, or we quickly forget about it. Gradually, as we become more experienced with meditation, we start to realize that awareness isn't just gathered around a, in quotes, me here. Awareness includes everything. It's more an awareness that there's no, in quotes, around, and nothing in particular that is, in quotes, you. It's all here in the experience of this moment, this directly experienced here now moment. Thus, we eventually see for ourselves that we never meditate alone. In fact, there is no, in quotes, by myself. In fully realizing this, loneliness disappears, and our meditation no longer has the taint of ego or greed. We also begin to see how our notions of self have, until now, relentlessly bullied and driven our mind with a load of ideas, fears, attitudes, and prejudices. This fixation on, in quotes, me now begins to be seen for what it is, delusion and a source of pain. Gradually, we also begin to resist meditation less. Maintaining a steady practice becomes more natural because we realize that we're not doing it alone. Meditation ceases to be something we make a personal effort to do. More and more we realize that our life is inseparable from the life of the world or the life of the whole universe. This realization alters our practice in profound ways. We no longer think of terms of what we're getting out of it or how it benefits ourselves or anyone else. We've learned to sit as the world or universe sits, in quietness and stillness. Our simple silent meditation now expresses the life of the universe. Our life really is the life of the universe. Our life is not our own, and true happiness is not ours to pursue. Nevertheless, it will overtake us if we let us. In forgetting yourself, you're never alone. With a mind cultivated in meditation, we are thus at home and at ease in the world or the universe. So I thought this was some very helpful teaching offered by Steve. And I thought it was worded in a way that was very clear. I thought I would give it to, offer it to you as much as possible as he said it. It was very clear, and I thought that it might be beneficial for people to hear this teaching. As I mentioned, this is a book I highly recommend. Even if you've read it, it's worth reading again. And even if you've read it a couple times, worth reading again. I'm not Steve's agent trying to get you to read this book more or to go buy more books. But it's very helpful. So I highly recommend this book. I've talked on this a number of times. It's a teaching that I think we can, it's very important to emphasize this. So I have emphasized it today. Do any of you have any questions? It took longer than I thought it was going to read this, but in my opinion, it's worth hearing. These are very good teachings of Steve, presented in a very clear way, in my opinion.
I have a comment for
you. What was that?
I have a comment.
Sure.
I think it's now or never when Elvis Presley sang it. Was the next to the last line, and the last line was, "My life won't wait," or something like that.
I love it. Yeah, I don't remember. It's Now or Never is the only part of that song I remember.
Well, that's the important part.
That's the most important part. But it's a beautiful song, don't you think? I mean, it's. I think it's. Based on a famous song, O Sol, Lo Mio. Is that right? Yeah. Very beautiful. But I don't remember the words except it's now or never. That's all I remember of it. But that's all you need to remember. That's the most important part. Oh, yes.
I thank you for the teachings today. Very, very helpful.
Well, thanks, Steve. Wow.
Well, thank you, Steve. when you talk about the regularity, or Steve talked about the regularity of practice and how just doing this with consistency is a way to sort of push back against the aversion. Practice, just get up and do it, and this will
right.
Go into other aspects of your life as well. And I know for me that's been a really important thing. And I've heard Steve talk about it in a way that he had one moment where his mind snapped. He had an encounter with another student, and he was talking about getting up early in the morning, and he stayed up late, and how he didn't really know if he was going to get up or not, and he just ended up doing it anyways. I can't remember the exact way he worded it. I was wondering if you had an experience like that where your mind kind of snapped and you just realized that that's all there is to it, is just to get up and do it and kind of not listen to your mind.
Yeah, it's very important just to do it. Yeah. And that's very important. You know, when it's time to get up. You know, if you're sick or something, that's okay. You stay and be sick. If you if for some reason you have to be away, just that's fine. But as much as possible, it's very important not to allow resistance to drag you away. And very naturally, resistance comes up. Or we don't need to criticize ourselves when resistance comes up. Just see that it's coming up, and like every other problem we have, just allow it to, just be aware and allow it to drop away. We don't need to criticize ourselves because we experience resistance. Just see that we're feeling resistant and resume the practice of just carrying out this practice. So it's very important to realize that it's always an opportunity to carry out this practice. Always a great opportunity. If we're getting caught up in preferences, thinking, you know, I'd much prefer doing this rather than carrying out here now, living here now experience. If we continually allow ourselves to be dragged away, it's pretty hard to really enter into this in a wholehearted way. And sometimes that becomes very clear. Does that address your question? Okay. Thank you. Just do as much as you can. When you see you're caught up in ideas, allow that to drop away. Do as much as you can. And if you find you can't let go, don't criticize yourself. Just resume the practice of seeing and letting go when you're caught up, and just continually living here now and doing that. Without a sense of criticism, without a sense of discouragement, you know, just continually resume this practice, and it can become clear that this is the way to go. This is how we can be released from our confusion about what our life is. And then the confusion comes up again. You know, just allow that to drop away. We don't have to say, darn it all, I thought I'd let go of my confusion, but here it is again. You know, confusion comes up, that's fine. Just allow it to drop away. It's as soon as you see that we're caught up in confusion, then resume the practice of just being aware here and now. So, was there something over?
What's that?
I changed my mind. No, I don't have a question.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting that, you know, in your previous life you worked at the post office in Berkeley, and then you were talking about in your comments that the here and now is really our permanent address.
Permanent address, yeah.
I'm asking everyone having here and now as their permanent address.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but it, the here now shows up in all sorts of different ways. Yeah, we have to, when we're working at the post office, we can't just say here now, your permanent address. We have to realize that here now shows up in all kinds of different ways. So, but we need to always return to here now. We can't really go anyplace else. This here now reality shows up in these. Looks at here, there, now and then, this and that, self and other and all that. But it is our permanent address, so we need to fully live there. Does that address your question? Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Here, yes, we are here. We're not home, but we are. I don't know. I just let it work out.
question. You might be a very wise Buddhist practitioner. Are we here? Yes, we are, son. We are here. We're now. We're here. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, you would say, don't be deceived by anybody or anything. And then he would say, no, I won't be. And then he would say again, are you here? Are you awake? And he would say, yes, I am. Then he'd say, don't be deceived by anything, by yourself or anything else. He would keep coming back to here now. Say, don't be deceived. Are you here? He would say, and he'd say, yes, I am. He'd say this all day long. People, probably more than a few people, thought he was a little crazy, but he was a great Zen practitioner. And I forget his name. It was Zuikan. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, oh gosh, oh my goodness, I've gone over the limit. Anyway, thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.